The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nuance Needed. I'm Amanda White.
And this is Sam Dalton.
We are licensed therapists who talk about internet culture and therapy speak. And Sam, I feel like this, we're going to talk about friendship groups today and friendship breakups. The Ashley Tisdale stuff is the perfect segue. And the perfect, like, this is where we shine, I feel.
Yes. Like. This is where we can really pull back the curtain and share very authentic thoughts. Not that we don't every other episode, but this is a topic in general, friendship group drama and friendship breakups, that people have been asking us to talk about almost since the start of the pod. And mm-hmm. we've had a couple of episodes throughout where we've kind of touched on it a bit, mm-hmm. but through different avenues. We've debated on it back and forth because it's such a monumental mm-hmm. topic. Mm-hmm. And it is, I mean, outside of maybe like marriage, mm-hmm. I think friendship breakup and group dynamics is almost as nuanced mm-hmm. as that, and has so many shades of gray and so many different iterations and versions and problems and this and that. And so when we saw the Ashley Tisdale and mom group drama unfolds, we were like, we can't run from this anymore. Yeah. Because also we have too many thoughts.
Yes.
About this. So Ashley Tisdale. Sharpay Evans, if you will.
French. Now she's French.
Now she's French.
If you haven't read it, the cut will make you pay to read it.
The cut will make you pay to read it. And yes, we both paid to read it. Proudly.
Yes.
So with that said, I did a little bit of digging outside to mm-hmm. kind of see if I could gain some perspective. Mm-hmm. I also saw that Meghan Trainor posted a response video today.
Did you watch it yet?
Yeah. Well, it's her plugging her single, and she's like typing at her keyboard, and she's like, how I found out I was a part of like mom drama or something.
And what's her single say?
It's like a new song of hers.
Oh, I didn't know if it had a coded meeting.
Well, no, the title of her song is like, I don't care. I think something like that. Okay. And that was sung. So anyway, fun point.
Yeah.
Regardless, if we go back, supposedly Ashley Tisdale wrote a blog post about mm-hmm. this drama back in October, mm-hmm. but it didn't gain traction the same way it did. She then decided to essentially take this, people who have read both say it's almost verbatim, the blog post to the Cut article, and she put it in the Cut.
Yeah, because she has this like lifestyle
yes.
brand, sort of. I think French doesn't, when I looked into the lifestyle brand French, it looks like they're not posting anymore, but she has her other like blog sort yeah. of. She's like a mom blogger. Yeah.
So she writes this article from her experience of when she had her baby, she felt really lonely, and she found a group of moms that she felt very connected to, and they got along, and they were similar life circumstances, and she liked that they all had careers and balance and were kind of still themselves in spite of their motherhood. And it was like a nice communal group for her to be a part of. Slowly, she starts to notice that plans are happening without her. They are making separate plans in front of her. And she is just feeling like there is a disconnect in the group as time goes on, and she feels isolated from the group. Then she also starts to remember that when she first started being part of the group, there was another mom that she had heard about being kind of iced out. And so as she starts to experience that, she thinks back to that realization and she starts to say to herself, you know, why am I tolerating people being mean to me? Shouldn't we be advocating for ourselves? I want to be an example to my daughter of how you stand up for yourself. And so her response is she sends in the group text to everybody, "This is reminding me of high school. I don't want to be a part of this. Goodbye." She then says some people respond, some people don't. Someone sent her flowers, but then didn't respond back to her when she said thank you for the flowers. And she eventually comes to the realization that this was a toxic group that she was a part of, and she was unhappy, and she's proud of herself for stepping out of that, but also very sad, and the whole emotional baggage that could come with that. So, Amanda, as you know, mm-hmm. I have thoughts about everything. I have thoughts about anything and everything. So you can imagine with this, I am brimming. But I would love to hear from you. Mm-hmm. What was your reaction to this article?
Oh, there's so many things too. We're going to try really hard to stay organized, guys. I want to start with friendship groups. And I have a lot to say about them because I feel like in my addiction and earlier years, I was someone more like Ashley.
Ooh.
And I've been on the other side of watching someone do that. So I'm very I feel very well-rounded in my understanding of friendship dynamics. I feel like, you know, you two as a therapist, you get to see what different people's interpretations are.
Right.
Or you can have, you know, I worked at a rehab, so I would basically watch friendships and then I was the therapist for every single person.
Oh, Lord.
So I would get to hear everyone's interpretation. Like, you wouldn't want to do that outside of a rehab center because it would be a conflict of interest. But in rehab, that's what happens. And you get to hear different people's perspectives. And I think that I get why feelings get hurt. It's really hard. And I think that we don't give enough space for humanity sometimes. And I think we kind of force this narrative, and that is what I picked up on first with Ashley's article, is that women have to support women and everyone needs to be included. And yes, I think that's important in theory, but also people are allowed to have individual friendships. Clearly, these women were friends before she came into the group. She acknowledged that. And I think where I kind of want to start is, I don't know, the way she was referring to it, it felt like she was talking about a sorority, which is similar to how I interacted with my own sorority. I thought we would be instant friends. I had I had sisters for life. And nowhere was it like, oh, I need to actually like nurture these relationships and get close to people. Like, I was just sad when my big in the sorority like wasn't someone who I talked to a ton during rush. And I felt very like, oh my God, everyone has favorites. And these people, like, there's a cool group in my sorority. And like, I'm not even saying that's not true. And there were certain cool girls in like the other, you know, the grade above us. And then they like picked who they wanted. And then, you know, you have this whole weird thing in sororities about like friendship families is what it's called, with like a big, a little, you know, all of it.
Right. Grand littles. I do know that.
Little littles, littlest, all of it. I get it. I get being hurt by it. But I also feel like, and if someone would have told me this back then, I would have told them to kick rocks. But I just feel like you also have to show up and participate, and no one is just going to hand you a friend group on a platter. And when I got sober and had some, you know, I've been in multiple friendship groups in my early 20s. I still have a friend group from essentially people that I got sober with. And that friendship group has changed throughout the years. But one thing that I did that I was very clear about was like, I liked these people. I wanted individual relationships with these people. So I am going to get to know them on different levels. I'm going to make sure that, because, right, like the goal of it's really fun to hang out with girls in a group and or anyone in a group. It's a different dynamic. But we also have to remember that groups change. Things happen. Some people are closer than other people. And if you are only interested in the group, not only does that like not serve you or anyone long term, but it's kind of like, why are you there. Like, I think that if you're only interested in the group and you're not interested in nurturing individual relationships, it sounds like that isn't the right group for you. Like, unless you want to go to a yoga class or something that is like an exteriorly organized group, if you want to continue to have this, you're going to have friendships. And it's been interesting because now on the other side of it, like, yeah, there was someone in our friend group who, like, a lot of things were more, it wasn't so specific as this was, but things have been there who haven't. And I've always tried to go out of my way to include people. But I have also been on the perspective of being included, for example, in something. And you can't always, there's an organic nature to relationships and making plans. And I think sometimes, especially with the internet, and I see this so much that, and it's worse because we can see what each other is doing. Like, right. That is a bad dynamic for sure. But it feels sometimes a little bit like what about me-ism, where we have to back up and have some perspective and recognize. And she kind of says, like, I tried not to take it personally, but it also sounds like she didn't do anything. She wasn't like, I planned something for us all to do together, or I reached out to a couple of the moms that I feel most connected with and nurtured those relationships. It sounds like she tried not to take it personally, but she didn't do anything different, and then was really surprised when that dynamic kept happening.
I found it incredibly rich that she had the audacity to say that these dynamics were mimicking high school, mm-hmm. and then had the most high school-based response I could possibly craft up in my mind. To announce to the group, with what we know of, mm-hmm. no attempt at repair, no attempt to...
But I think she couldn't even repair Sam because she wasn't even friends with him enough, I think, to repair. That's the irony.
But that's what I'm saying. Exactly as you said, check of, oh, I'm going to talk to this person and be like, hey, like, what? Am I the one being like too sensitive here? Is this kind of how everybody feels sometimes? Because it is a group is just a community. And a community is going to have different groups within the community. And it is humbling. It is an ego check to maybe realize that you are a part of the group sometimes and not always a part of it in other ways. Mm-hmm. But also that is just life. And yeah. I have yet to either be a part of a group, know a group of women, or have watched people be a part of a group of women where that is not the dynamic, where it's not like there's maybe 10 and two or three over here are really close and 4 or 5 over here really close and 2 or 3 really close. And then maybe the two groups come together, but then like the 2 over here will do lunch, but then they'll come over and do lunch mm-hmm. with like the 5 and, or they'll all get together and do a trip. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I have seen that dynamic. I'm a part of that dynamic myself. I tried really hard when I was reading it to give her the benefit of the doubt and to have empathy, because that is very hard. Feeling left out is the worst feeling in the world. It doesn't matter how stable you feel. It doesn't matter how great of a marriage you're in or how lovely your family is, how great a career you have. Like, it doesn't matter. Feeling left out sucks and it hurts. And I think to just drop a bomb in the group of, I don't think you like me and you're being mean to me and I'm gone. Mm-hmm. To me, that was just a passive aggressive bid for people to do a temperature check to see who would reach out to you, who would check in with you, who would not respond. To me, that was her testing the water without having to go and do the work to foster a relationship and actually ask, what is the dynamic in this group? And figure out like, oh, you know what? I don't relate as much to this person, but I relate to this person. Mm-hmm. These two are my people. These two are very nice. I have no problem with, but we don't have as much in common. And so I think this very explosive exit, for lack of a better term, you will perpetually be the victim because in your mind, no one's response is going to be good enough. You have set everybody up for failure when you just throw it out and say, all of you are the worst. You're horrible. You're immature. Bye. Like, no response was going to be good enough to her short of them coming to her and groveling. Mm-hmm. And even then, in her mind, it would have been, because I've heard people share these stories before, mm-hmm. it would have been, well, why did it take me doing that for you to finally tell me that you care? I am also someone that I think to air people out in that way, when you know the circles that you're in, And you know that every single person in this group is a public figure and that all of you have posted together and there's proof and evidence that you guys are all together. To me, the vagueness was almost silly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as I was reading it, I was like, we're all going to sleuth this in about 7 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to figure out the group that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And we're going to know who you're referring to. And we're going to know what this is about. And I guess I'm just not sure what this article is supposed to be teaching people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was really trying hard to be like, what perspective is the cut trying to demonstrate here? Because I have no proof that how those other women were behaving was actually legitimately toxic. To make plans with people or to be busy and in your own world and not responding to things sometimes, that happens mm-hmm. in modern day. Never mind, this is not just like 10 single women who go home at night and do nothing. These are women with husbands, multiple children, careers, projects they're working on, obligations that they're a part of, deals that they have to be doing stuff for. Like, and I am not trying to be an apologist for anybody. And again, like, I don't know all of the actual details for this. And I'm sure there were things and moments that were intentionally left out to try to keep the illusion that this is vague. However, I just think there was a complete ignorance of reality around what, like, how actual groups and actual adults function. And I don't see that there was like a healthy, stable adult responding to how they were feeling in that moment.
Yeah, I think that it's just extremely emotionally immature to drop this huge bomb, to not really try to repair. And I think it's hard. She probably in her mind thought she was trying to repair somewhat. But I actually think it's also just such a fascinating case study of group dynamics, group norms, right? If we put on our group therapist hat, if you all don't mm-hmm. know, listening, part of becoming a therapist is you literally take classes on groups mm-hmm. and you run groups and you learn about like the norms of groups and what is accepted and what some of the rules are. And this group already was established as she came into it. And part of like being good in a group, number one, you need to have really secure attachment to be in a friend group because it will trigger insecurities being in a friend group because inevitably people will hang out without you. And if you can't tolerate that, which some people can't, won't, don't want to,
mm-hmm.
You shouldn't be in one that is mm-hmm. at least, that is not organized by something, like I said before, external, where everyone can pay to sign up for this yoga class or this community mm-hmm. walk or whatever. So yeah, I think that's just fascinating, right? And then I think the other part of this is, you know, you were asking Sam, like, what did she think she was going to get? I mean, I think people don't think about that was like dropping a grenade and then being like, what happened? Like, I love what you said. I totally agree about it was sort of this bid. It was almost this like ultimatum, like come and get me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what do you expect people to do? And then she gets to walk away being like, I stood up for myself and mm-hmm. I did what was right. When you do something like that, truthfully, what do you expect people to do? Because mm-hmm. there's very little someone can do at that point to even repair when you start by throwing a grenade.
Well, and if I had never been informed that anybody had a problem with me,
mm-hmm.
and I thought things were fine, and I get a text like that, in my mind, I immediately go to, well, I didn't do anything. So mm-hmm. this is clearly a problem with somebody else. I'm not getting involved. Like truly, if nobody had approached me, if there had never been an off discussion or, you know, bad blood or any type of, you know, conversation that could be misconstrued as like a disagreement or an argument or anything like that. If we had just been friendly and fine at these events and I didn't have a problem with anybody, if that text came through in the group chat, I would dismiss myself. Mm-hmm. I would be like, well, this has nothing to do with me. I'm going to let that lie. I find it to be fairly self-centered.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I want to be very clear when I say that's not advocacy in any form. That's not advocacy. That's not what self-advocacy actually looks like. Sure, if there had been multiple attempts at conversations and people in the group were actively aware of someone had been hurt or someone had been upset or something had gone wrong, right? Feel free to announce in the group chat, like, hey guys, like, just wanted to say, like, I'm going to be leaving the group, you know, after everything that's gone on. just doesn't feel like this is a fit. Appreciate it. Bye. Right? Like, mm-hmm. sure. Even then, like, I think I would tell a client, like, why bother?
That's what I keep coming up against.
Like, just leave the group chat.
Yeah.
Just leave it.
Or just, like, stop responding and they will
– Yeah.
They'll figure it out. I don't know. And I think part of it, too, with, like, as we're getting into the friendship breakup piece, it feels sometimes, again, like, you don't always need to break up with your friends. Sometimes no. – You need more friends. Sometimes we need to shift our energy mm-hmm. because when you throw a grenade like that, she burned a bridge,
yes.
which maybe that's fine. But I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily, unless someone's like teasing my daughter on the playground or like bullying her or, you know, I think kids and adults are different. So they adults understand the nuance of something. I don't think anyone was doing anything wrong. I think she was being left out and it hurt her feelings. And I don't think that warranted this kind of response. And I don't think it was empowering for her to say this even.
No, because everything about this article to me tells on her and the mental state she's in currently mm-hmm. rather than me looking at this group and being like, whoa,
yeah.
these people are dicks.
And like we've said, maybe, you know, she didn't want to reveal more because it would be bad and PR and stuff like that against other people. But I don't know. When I was reading this too, I was just like, it feels like she's stuck in 2016.
Yes.
Girl boss, women supporting women era.
Yes. Well, and the second someone says they were wronged, we have to implicitly... Like, there is no room for doubt or other perspective. I am not talking about something like sexual assault, right? I just want to make that very clear. What we are talking about here are relational dynamics and how things play out in relationships and groups and families and that. And there was a girl boss era of like, girl, you said you were hurt, like walk away. Walk mm-hmm. away. You don't have to stay where you're not wanted and you don't have to stay where you're feeling uncomfortable. Walk away. Here's the thing, and here's a radical truth, and I am holding all of your hands when I say this. Just because you feel something does not mean that feeling is factually accurate to the situation. Just because you are feeling something does not mean something actually happened or that you were actually wronged. You can feel bad because an insecure part of yourself was triggered or activated, or something that happened in a dynamic brought you back to an old relationship or something painful had happened. That does not mean that dynamic has now become immediately toxic because you experienced a negative feeling as a result of something happening in that dynamic. It is possible to misread things. It is possible to misunderstand things. It is possible to not have the full picture of why someone is making the decisions they're making or why they've done what they've done. There is so much truth to intent and what was meant behind something and what wasn't. And what I feel incredibly frustrated with this article, and I shared a TikTok where I chatted about this very briefly, is all we have arrived at with all of this therapy speak and everything that people talk about and this education and sense of empowerment that people have, all people know how to do is regurgitate what they feel and they demand validation and apology and then they want to back out and be done. All we know how to do now is just, I felt this. And if someone says to you, well, like, but what about that? Right? Maybe this. Well, no, I felt that. Great. Nobody is arguing with you that you didn't feel that. What we're saying is, what if you allowed yourself to feel the relief that you read the situation wrong? What if you allow yourself to entertain like, ooh, I think I was hurting my own feelings in this situation, instead of just constantly perseverating on like, I feel this way, I feel this way, I feel this way. And guess what? If you feel that way and you want to have a relationship and a friendship that matters to you and goes the distance, you're going to have to talk to him about it. And I'm going to share like a personal example that literally happened 5-6 days ago. I royally put my foot in my mouth with a friend of mine and I didn't recognize it in the moment. And she texted me the next day and said, hey, I thought about it. I felt really uncomfortable. I would really rather we not talk about that again. End of story. I wanted to die. I wanted to crawl out of my skin. I felt sick to my stomach. And I realized in that moment that what I wanted to do was overly like prostrate myself to have her make me feel better. And I was like, nope, I'm not going to give a reason. I'm not going to share my mindset right now. All I said to her was, I will read you the text that I sent. I'm not reading the text that she sent. I said, "You're very right, and I'm incredibly sorry. That was not right on my part. I wasn't thinking, and it was a huge miss. I love you. I hope you can forgive me. It will not happen again." She responded very kindly. I said, "Thank you for telling me and calling me in on that. I'm so sorry. Your friendship truly means so much, and that will not happen again." She again responded very kindly. I said, "I love you." She said, "I love you too." I gave her 2 days to sit on it, and I then called her, and I said, "This is not a call to justify this. I just want to make sure that you feel that you've said what you want to say. And I wanted to verbally apologize to you about what happened and let you know how much that means to me and how aware I am of it and how disappointed I am in myself. And I just really want to give you a chance to say." And she was so kind, and we're very lucky because we had a very grounded friendship before this. And she was very gracious, and she said, "I totally get it. I understand the context and the dynamic. I just wanted to advocate for myself." And I said, "Absolutely, you should. Done and done. I love you. I love you." We chatted on the phone for another 10 minutes, and now we're completely fine. And I wanted to share that example because what I was so grateful for is that she came to me and told me there was a problem. She didn't dwell on it. She didn't resent me for it. She didn't file it away for later. She immediately said, less than 12 hours after it happening, "Hey," and she was very respectful and she was very kind. And I recognized that my job was to just take it because I had made a mistake, and it was not her job to make me feel better about that. And I think if more people were willing to sit in those spaces in either direction, the space where you respectfully ask for accountability, right? And also the space where you recognize that you were in the wrong and that you allow that discomfort to sit there and you feel bad and you feel guilt, because guilt is really healthy. You don't have to feel shame, but you can feel guilt. And I would cringe in the shower when I thought about it and I wanted to die, but that's okay because I had made a mistake and I said something flippantly that I should not have said. And we are now stronger for it. And when I read, to have that happen and me go through that experience, to then read the Ashley Tisdale article, it just felt like it was so rich to me that she was pointing out that it feels like high school, because I'm like, no, I feel like I'm reading this from the point of view of a high schooler. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm reading this from the point of view of a 15-year-old that was like, they were so mean to me and left me out. And I just told them, like, I'm not going to be your friend anymore. Like, that was the energy. There was nothing productive of it. There was no self-reflection of like, you know what? I learned about myself in this group dynamic, and I learned that I don't do well in groups, or that I needed different types of friends with different types of interests or whatever, right? There was no introspection. It's just, I was wronged, thus I am right. And here's what I did because I am all right. And you do it too. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're going to like veer into the friendship breakup space, I think there's two types of people. And there's the person who is recognizing the friendship isn't for them anymore. And then there's the person who is going to be losing a friend as a result of that. And I think we've all inhabited those roles, mm-hmm. both of those roles at different times in different relationships. And I think we often spend so much time focusing on and giving tips to the person who has been wronged. Mm-hmm. The person who has been ghosted, the person who was not given a chance to repair, the person who lost the friendship, not the person who chose to lose it. And I think this event that I went through the other day, I'd really like to talk to some of the people who have recognized a friendship isn't working for them anymore, or have walked away from friendships. I also threw up a question box on my Instagram stories where I asked people about this. Mm-hmm. And there were so many people that were talking about how they've been ghosted by people. They were told they did something wrong and never given a chance to address it. They were blocked. They were ripped to shreds and, again, never given a chance to try to repair. And I think if you are someone who is recognizing that a friendship doesn't work for you or something has happened in that friendship, you owe that person an explanation. And if it is a friendship that at any point has had meaning to you, it is a massive growth opportunity for you to give them the chance to see how they deal with your pain. Are they respectful of it? Do they acknowledge what they did? Do they want to do better? Right? Do they express a sense of remorse and guilt and, oh my God, I would never want to do anything to cause you harm. I'm very sorry. Right? Mm-hmm. Are you actually giving people the chance to do that? And I think the narrative that I see is so often now tied into this Ashley Tisdale response, which is, well, I've just realized like this doesn't work for me and I'm gone. And it's like, that's not how healthy relationships are maintained. And I'm not even trying to have this like utopian view where it's like, oh, like if everybody just like held hands, we'd be fine. No.
No, you're talking about real conflict and conflict resolution skills. And I love, Sam, that you talked about how in that moment you didn't make someone, you didn't make her take care of you.
Yes.
Because again, like I am so viscerally pulled into what I did wrong in my addiction. And that is what I would do to people is, and a lot of times, and I don't often say I'm holding your hand while I say this, but I'm actually going to do that right now. You like, so often what we mess up is that moment you were talking about, is we cannot hold our own guilt, our own feelings, our own pain of how we made someone feel, and we throw it to them like a hot potato.
Yeah.
And then we're confused why that person isn't taking care of us. And when we don't get that response, sometimes we're more martyry, right? That's where really, if you think about, it's actually a type of defensiveness.
Yes.
When you martyr yourself and you're like, I guess I'm just the worst friend in the world. That's a way that you're trying to escape how you're feeling. And if you want to have a healthy relationship, the number one skill, I would say, is taking it.
Yep.
Is sitting, listening, hearing what someone says about you. You don't have to agree even, although I know, Sam, you agreed in this case. And you can agree that that's someone's perspective and that.
Yes.
Right. You can, like, both of your guys' truths were correct. Like, you didn't mean it.
Yeah.
And it really hurt her. And what you also did, Sam, that is crucial, is you made a plan, right? You said this isn't going to happen again. And that is, you know, we should eventually probably do an episode on how to actually apologize. But that is, like, the most crucial part of apologizing. And I truly think, like, who I am the way I am because I went through AA and I had to do
a lot of apologies.
Yeah. 20, 30, 40 apologies where I'd have to sit there and shut my mouth and hear what I did to people and what it was like for them. And some of the people were like, I want nothing to do with you. And I'd be like, okay, got it. That's
fair. Thank you for your time.
And not make it about me. And I think to connect it to right, like, the virtual world we live in, and we have more knowledge and ways to talk about therapy speak, but less and less emotional capacity to sit with things. I think that's part of what's happening is when you can just scroll to escape how you're feeling, when you can make your life so frictionless, when you don't have to even have conversations in person or on the phone anymore, it erodes our capacity to sit with hard feelings without doing anything. And it's like we can name all of our feelings. It's exactly what you were saying, Sam, but we're losing the capacity to sit with them. And it creates this huge disjointed result.
Yes. And to take it is how you build trust.
And you get better at it. Like it's a skill.
It's a skill. And here's the other thing too. You just have to take it from them.
Yes.
You get to go out and process it. You better believe I like ran across the hallway in the living room to my sister and I was like, I'm a piece of shit. Like, and she was like, it's going to be okay. Like, you know, whatever. And I was very lucky that it was. And I would have had to live with if it wasn't. Right. Mm-hmm. But what I was so appreciative of is that I was given the chance to do that. And I told her that. And what I love that you brought up that like we're just not good at sitting in it, because I feel like all of the therapy speak now is used as a tool to justify why you don't have to sit in what is uncomfortable. All of it. If you look at any of the approaches that it takes, right? Like if you want to talk about, well, I'm being mindful, well, I'm having boundaries, well, I need to manage my nervous system, or, you know, throwing around varying diagnoses of varying levels and magnitudes. And really, when you then see how someone responds to that, so much of it culminates in avoidance. it culminates in like, well, I don't have to have that conversation. I don't have to do that. I don't need to do this. And yes, obviously there are some times where you have tried and you have made effort and you have put the time in and the other person wasn't receptive. You then get to make decisions based on that lack of receptiveness. I would argue most of you are not even allowing yourselves to get to a space where you even see if they're receptive. Mm-hmm. You make assumptions around what they will or will not be. And then you base your decision off of assumptions mm-hmm. and off of your insecurities and off of your fears. And then you cut somebody off or you walk away from something or you leave. And then the rest of the year, you're like, why am I so lonely? Mm-hmm. Why am I lonely? Why? I feel like I can't keep good friends. There's no good friends out there anymore. Like I don't, you know, where are these good friends? And I'm like, good friends are found in struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you build them.
You build them. You build them through connective moments. You build them through, you know, boundaried vulnerability, right? Vulnerability over time. And you have shared experiences and shared moments. And you realize that you can be a safe container for either or, depending on what they're going through. I just think so many people are missing out on that. And if you truly, if something has happened that you feel you cannot come back from, mm-hmm. someone has done something has happened, fine. You almost owe it to yourself to have a moment where you figure out the language to speak clearly to what that thing was. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, well, I'm not going to talk about it, mm-hmm. right? I had a couple years ago, I had another friendship at the time where I was on the other end of the spectrum. I had been wronged. And we did have a big conversation about it. And I, you know, I laid it out. It was an hours long phone call. And I thought it was received. And I saw as time went on through behavior that it wasn't. And I left. I walked away mm-hmm. because what I had said had already, what I mm-hmm. wanted to say had already been shared. I had said it, I had gotten it off my chest, but I feel like when you don't allow yourself the chance to have a conversation, whatever that looks like, mm-hmm. that is a key moment that will make or break you being able to actually move forward. Because if you never get an opportunity to sit, like even think of like a relationship breakup, mm-hmm. right? When the relationship ends and if they just ghost you and walk away, think of how long it takes you to unwind from that because you never had a chance to say what it is that you wanted to say. You never had the chance to get it off of your chest. It is the same rules apply for friendship. And if that was a friendship that meant something to you, why not just try? Mm-hmm. Like, why not just try to say, let's see if we can fix this. Let's see if we can salvage this. And if we can't, we can't. And if we will, great. We can move on with like a stronger foundation and a sense of understanding in each other. And I just really want to make this clear that we are not advocating for people to stay in abusive situations. I get it. If people are cruel to you or dismissive of you, or they are abusive to you, or they have taken advantage of you, yes, please respond accordingly.
So what is the nuance here then with how do we know when we should speak up and have the mm-hmm. conversation? And then when is it a situation where it's like, maybe you don't need to have a big breakup conversation. Maybe no. you need to put your efforts and energy somewhere else and make some other friends or invest in the other friends you have.
Yeah. I think, was there a definitive moment? Was there a definitive exchange, conversation, slight harm caused, moment of harm caused, where you can immediately point to and be like, that's where it all changed for me, right? Mm-hmm. Is there that specific moment where something happened, something went wrong that you didn't feel comfortable with or you didn't like, and you don't know what to do, mm-hmm. right? I would say, have you had difficult conversations with this friend in the past? Mm-hmm. How have they responded? How have you seen them respond, right? Have you seen them navigate something difficult between another friend mm-hmm. outside of you? What is like the standing of your relationship right now? Mm-hmm. Were things like tootling along great and then this happens? Had things been kind of rough and rocky and maybe there were some things that you had ignored mm-hmm. and maybe some things that you tried to swallow and tried to say like, oh, I don't care. It's not a big deal. It's fine. It's fine. And then I think to give yourself some time to look at the relationship as a whole mm-hmm. and kind of expand out and say like, how have I been feeling in this friendship? Do I feel that it's like an equitable mm-hmm. friendship? Do I feel that this is someone I can trust? Do I like spending time with this person, right? Is this someone that brings something to my life? And like the very cliche, do you leave feeling better, right? Do you walk away from time with them feeling lighter, brighter, a little more joyful, a little more hopeful? Like, is this person bringing something meaningful to your life? Mm-hmm. And I think the reason you look at all of that is because all of those things then inform what you feel would be the most impactful for you. So if you think that this is a friendship that you want to maintain, great, like have a conversation. Or if you maybe think, you know what, like that's a lot of energy that I don't want to have, maybe I'm just going to like back off a bit. And not like anything noticeable or say like I'm going to ice them out, right? But just kind of live. Now, if this is a friend that you are talking to them all day, every day, constantly, you might have to be held to account because that person is going to notice immediately when you go 3 to 5 business days without talking to them.
And that is, I think, a modern challenge where I think we used to not have to do that as much because we were less connected. So it was easier to sort of grow apart, where now it is a lot more obvious, which forces, I think, more of these more intense conversations, which can lead one to the conclusion that there are more friendship breakups. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if someone, like, here's the other thing. If you kind of pull back a little bit and someone asks you, right? I get a little frustrated sometimes when people have the same old, like, oh, I've been busy. You have to decide, like, what is it worth to you? Are you worth this person continuing to bang down your door? Mm-hmm. Right? Because they can still sense that there's a problem or something is different or something is not right. And you just keep telling them over and over and over, like, I'm busy, I'm busy, I'm busy, I'm busy. Mm-hmm. We're not, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to try to tell somebody how they are. But you have downtime at some point throughout the day where you could respond to a text, a meme, someone send you a TikTok or a reel or whatever, right? Like,
or create it with that person. Yes. I think what we're talking about is a radical change that happens. And unless like a very big life event has happened, and even like that's sort of my nuance of it is I think people sometimes are like, you have to respond to people or everyone doesn't need to respond to people. And my nuance is sort of like, you can do whatever you want. You just have to create it with someone.
Yeah,
like one of my best friends is a terrible texter. And I know that about him and I do not care. So like I will text him 7 to 1 and he doesn't respond, but I do not take it personally at all. And he also is consistent. I'm in a friend group with him and he's consistent among other people. So we all kind of like laugh about how overwhelmed he gets. But yeah, it's like you can create a lot of like one of my best friends also, she doesn't like to text and it's really hard to get on the phone because I don't love being on the phone. Mm. And we're sort of like, this is the way it is. Yeah, and we just kind of have a friendship where we don't talk a lot. But when we do, it's like nothing ever happened. And that's fine. That's where it's like looking at people's capacities individually also.
Yes, I love that. And also, if you are on the end where you feel like you're sensing that things are different or weird or you don't feel comfortable or something about them has changed, like, it is okay to not always immediately center yourself.
Yes.
Right? Like, to immediately go, like, if you can truly in your mind be like, I can't think of anything I did wrong. In our day and age, there's a lot going on right now. In case none of you have been online ever in the last 5 years, there's a lot happening. There's a lot that's been happening. There's a lot that's going to continue to happen, unfortunately. And I think to even through all of this, to sometimes be prepared to give the benefit of the doubt.
And decenter yourself.
To decenter yourself and allow a world to exist where maybe it literally has nothing to do with you. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with you. And that's okay. And that also doesn't mean that that person is a bad friend because they're not centering you. Because they have their own life and their own stressors and their own things going on. And the other flip side to that is, if you have realized you need friends that are a little more active, I have 2 points for you. One, you're probably going to be pretty lonely and frustrated in your life. And two, go make more friends. Go make more friends. Go out to things. Go to classes. Go to groups. Go to events. Meet people. Talk. Yep. And have a broad, deep well of people that you can pull from when you can sense someone else is going the other way. Having a singular best friend can be a lovely, beautiful, fulfilling experience. And it also sets you up for failure when every single relational egg is in one relational basket.
And things change. Like I literally shiver to think about how some of my best friends now, like, we didn't start out being really, really close. Like, our relationship was a lot more of a slow burn. It took a lot of time. People who I, when I looked at my friend group at the time in my 20s, the people who I were like, these are the people I'm closest with, and these are the people who I'm not as close with and I probably won't continue to be friends with long term.
Right.
I've been completely wrong, and those things have fully inversed. Like, I'm in a friend group where the few people that weren't in, like, that weren't my bridesmaids, for example, are like my best friends now. And some of the people that were my bridesmaids, I have lost more touch with.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also because we change, we evolve. Some of my friends become parents, some of them didn't, some of them moved, some of them didn't. It all changes so much. And we need to, that is part of the healthy attachment, the decentering we're talking about, where if you want to exist in these friendship dynamics, you do have to be able to recognize that there is nuance and not everything is about you. Mm-hmm. And we're all messy. We're going to do things wrong. We have to stop expecting perfection from other people as well.
Amen. I like that you just kind of brought up distance, because I also think another layer here is the recognition that sometimes you just grow apart. Nothing specific happened.
Mm-hmm.
You just grow apart. And I think that is one of the scenarios where I really lean heavily towards, like, you don't need to have a conversation. You can just kind of like go about and live your life. Like, if there is no particular problem that you can point to, it's just like time and life circumstances and distance, whatever. Like, that is a situation where even if I was like working with a client, I would be like, what is it worth to go be like, why did you stop talking to me? Because sometimes it really isn't that deep. It really isn't. It's just life happened. You guys got on different life trajectories with different priorities, and you met other people probably.
Well, it is really fascinating if you boil it down to like what keeps people friends long term and what doesn't. Like, as I'm thinking about this, it's like obviously proximity makes a big difference. If you have the same superficial interests, if you have the same career path or maybe more meaningful, the way you think about the world interests, if you have more identity interests in terms of, right, like you're a parent or, right, you're not a parent, things like that. And then it's also like communication styles if you guys live apart. And like, as I'm thinking about this, Sam, right, like some people would be like, why are you guys such good friends, right? Because you've moved, we have different circumstances and things like that. And if we took away the podcast even, we have a lot of interests that are aligned and we both love to text.
Yes.
We love to text.
We love to text.
And not we're like texters. A lot of my best friends are texters because they love to text. And the people I don't talk to as much are people that just like don't want to text. And we could do a whole nother episode, I think, about like catch up culture and how hard it is to stay close with people if you don't have the same. It's so easy. It's so much easier to maintain friendships. And it's one thing I do actually where I get a lot of people are like, oh my God, it's so exhausting to catch people up on my life. And that's why I try to stay in touch with the people that I really want to stay in touch with, because then I never feel like I have to catch up with them as much. So sometimes there is a level of maybe it's a little more work to keep interacting with people more often. But then when you do spend time together, it's more meaningful and it's not such a chore.
Well, and also, I'm sorry, this is going to take effort, guys. Like, I'm really like starting to kind of lose patience with this dichotomy that we have now where a lot of people are like, well, I want this, but like, I shouldn't have to do that. Well, you are going to have to.
Yeah.
You are going to have to dig deep and figure out how to like verbalize your life situation in a way that feels manageable to you.
Yeah. Like, or accept it and just be like, this is where I am right now. Like, Sam and I are going to do an episode about hobbies and it's going to probably be all about me being like, I have no hobbies. And do I care enough to change that?
She literally texted me and said, my hobby is work. And there was one other thing in the text. So
physical therapy.
A medical appointment.
What can I say? You left, Sam. You left.
I know. I know. I did. I'm sorry. It's It's my fault. It's my fault you don't have hobby. No, like I think all of the like everything that we're talking about so far is this is effort. It is effort. And I don't know how to tell you, like, things are not instantaneous. Things don't have to be overnight. Some things are going to take time, and they are going to take consistency, and it's going to take you showing up, and it's going to take you deciding, like, what are my values here? Mm-hmm. What do I value? What is the type of person that I want to be? And that ever famous golden rule that was like rammed down our throats when we were 10, like the freaking golden rule. How do you want to be treated? What type of respect would you like to be given? And I also have, I wrote this down in my notes app about a week ago when you and I decided we were going to do this. And it is a very spicy take.
All right, let's hear it.
And I've been sitting on it. I think now friendship issues and group dynamics and being left out has lasted for as long as humans have been human. I also think the Real Housewives franchises have contributed to the demise of people feeling that they can maintain friendships. And the reason why is because I think some of the most unhinged, insane, unregulated, emotionally immature reactions are normalized. And instead of being called out more often than not, how some of these fights go down and the drama and the upset and the friendship breakups that we watch happen, it's never called out. It's just dissected. We just dissect it.
No, that is, I think, one of the milder takes ever. I 100% full 10 toes agree with that. And I think you could expand it into reality television.
Yes.
I think if we could do a whole episode on what it has done to our psyches and dating and all of that. And the problem is if you look at what – and I watch Real Housewives, especially Salt Lake City, because I really, really enjoy the Mormon component. I think the problem with it is it's essentially a paid job where they have to pretend like they're a friend group, but they're not friends. They're coworkers mostly. And then also to keep their job, they have to be ridiculous enough that people want to keep watching, but not too but they also want to be, you know, not too ridiculous that people don't like them. But some people just fully lean into the ridiculousness because it works. So the incentives are not aligned for a healthy friendship dynamic at all. And they're not aligned in most reality TV. If you look at Love is Blind, all the couples that we never heard of that are cut from the show are like the normal ones that aren't in a three-way weird thing and saying mean things about the other ones.
So something that I am trying to do for January is to really focus on being gentle. I think sometimes the new year can be a little bit intense, a little bit resolutions and goal heavy, and I am trying to go a little bit more with the season, if you will, and allow winter to be slow and calm. And one of those things is a very important habit that I am bringing from last year and the year before and really my whole life into this season of slowness, which is the beauty of a freshly made bed. And with that said, my cozy earth sheets have up-leveled the game when it comes to my bedtime. They are the comfiest, coziest, most incredible sheets that I have ever slept in. And I will not lead you astray on that. I will stand on business with this and say it with my whole chest. These are the best sheets I have ever used, including their pajamas. And the wild thing is the sheets and the pajamas are made from the same substance. It's called viscose from bamboo. It's viscose and it's from bamboo. And it is amazing. And the thing that I love about this company so much is that not only are you getting an incredible product, you get a 100-night sleep trial. Okay, so for 100 nights, you can try this out and still give it time to give it back. And they also have a 10-year warranty on the product. This is absolutely insane. And Cozy Earth is being incredible, and they have given us a code just for you for 20% off your order. If you use code NUANCE, that's NUANCE, at checkout, you will get 20% off your order today. Give the gift of comfort that lasts beyond the holidays and carries into a cozy new year. I cannot wait to hear how much you love these sheets.
Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And I know, like, maybe some of you sitting here are saying I'm boring. And there's a world to say, like, well, our job as people living in reality is to have enough discretion to, like, see it for what it is and see that it's just entertainment and it's just meant to be consumed. But also, I think what we are starting to see in, like, the breakdown of fabric, like the social fabric and the social order in terms of how people like treat each other and what people think they are owed in terms of respect and people who think they do not owe other people respect. I think a lot of it can be rooted in the examples that we see publicly of the way some of these situations, like friendship breakups or regular breakups, or like you said, dating, or, you know, even like building friendships, right? I feel like it's a very common storyline on a Housewives franchise where there's an established friendship and then a new person comes in and one person becomes closer to the new person and the old person feels resentful and nobody ever talks to anybody and the new person kind of likes being the one that like broke up this dynamic. And it's a very common storyline. And I think some people might push back and say like, well, I've experienced that. And I would be like, well, yeah, just because you've experienced it doesn't make it right or healthy.
Well, I think the problem too is, right, like, yeah, I think it's entertainment. We're not saying ban reality TV by any means.
No.
And yes, I like, we're not even saying like it's not good. It's not as serious to watch as other things. We're not like devaluing it. Mm-mm. I think the big point and the issue is that I want to look up the statistics so I get it right.
Yeah.
Like there, I want to know what the statistic is of what percentage of shows now are reality shows.
Ooh.
Huh. This is interesting. Okay, there isn't definitive data, but essentially what people say globally is it's about 75% of TV shows now. That's a huge percent. Huge.
Yep. Huge.
Specifically, it seems like the pandemic really, like everything. Why? Everything was just after the pandemic, it was just like reality dropped like a rock and everything fell apart. And I think the other thing, Sam, which we've been talking about with therapy language, the amount of therapy speak now on these shows, gaslighting, toxic, narcissist, is so misused and so warped from its original meaning that perforates through culture and trickles down. And that is what essentially the word concept creep is something is taken as it was, and then it expands vertically and expands horizontally. So it is much bigger than the word originally encapsulated was defined.
That is, I'm glad you brought up, like, I promise I'm not bringing that up to say, like, down with the Housewives franchises, sit in your home and knit. Like, that's not what I'm trying to say. Like, I engage with it as much as anybody. I watched Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, even though I have my issue with it. And maybe that's like a value discrepancy I need to sit with for a while. But I just think there has to be like some type of a reckoning that the things that we are taking in and consuming are impacting the way that we live our personal lives. Mm-hmm. And that to sit and consume content around all these different types of shows or content creators or storylines or things that you see. I think even something like the Cut article by Ashley Tisdale, like we are all impacted by what we consume, whether we want to admit it or not. When you constantly see that there is toxicity and upset and upheaval anytime repair is brought up, there is going to be an assumption that that is what repair is. And I think that's like anytime you see on any of these shows when people try to like address something or make it better, right? Like the conversation will always implode because it's entertainment and the producers push buttons and they want people to be upset. And I think what they stand on is literally like, well, we are entertainment. We don't pretend to be, we're not sitting here trying to be ethical. Like, we're just trying to entertain you, and human beings love this shit. Yet, I think the more stories that I hear from average people about how we're handling conflict and how we're handling friendship and how everybody is saying how lonely they are and how they don't have a friend group. They've never had a friend group. They want closer friends. They want better friends. They want the quality of friends. It's like, well, you have to then look around and be like, well, this can't just be like me by myself, mm-hmm. not knowing how to connect. And sometimes that's true. There are some people that struggle to know how to bond with people, or people that really struggle mm-hmm. with social anxiety. And that's a very real thing. But also, I would say the only way to get over social anxiety is to have to start practicing being social.
100%.
And I think that's the reason why our podcast is a slow burn in the growth department, is because we are like ramming really hard pills down your throat. And that's what sucks, is like a lot of this is, it's not convenient to hear. And it's not convenient to look at yourself and be like, how have I been contributing to this problem? Like, what are the skills that I am lacking and don't have that have maybe impacted my previous friendships? And I can think of friendships all through my life that I would have handled completely differently if I had had the tools then that I had now, or the awareness that I have now that would have been really helpful then. And there's no perfection to this. It's that we're constantly learning and adapting. And that, you know, not every friendship is going to go the distance. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. But if there is a friendship that you would like to see go the distance, if there's a friendship that you do care about and it does matter to you, you are going to have to put in some effort to that. And you're going to have to try things differently. And you're going to have to let, you know, kind of the common vibe now of like, walk away from what's not good for you, which I cannot stand, but that is what a lot of people think, and maybe challenge that. You have to challenge like some of the stuff that you're hearing and seeing and be like, well, that doesn't work for me though. Like, that doesn't work for me and my friends. So what does work?
It's also because we're not always perfectly reliable narrators either. And I think about times where I could have walked away from friendships because of something someone said, or I didn't like it, or, you know, I didn't feel like things were perfectly equal, or things like that. But we have to give grace for, like, we're always, like, I just think we have to look at trends. Like, things are not always going to be perfectly 50-50, but what is the general trend? Like, we may make mistakes, or they might say something that they make a mistake, but like, we have to allow for people to be perfect, imperfect and human. And I think it's also like, that is the problem with the less we're in community with each other, the more that tolerance for just like messiness and inconvenience and imperfection and rubbing up against people, not always physically, but that is a skill that I fear is being eroded. And then we wonder why we're so lonely. Like, everything is so, I don't know. It's what we've talked about too, with like how high stakes things are. It's like, to go out to spend time with a friend, you have to go out to dinner with them. You have to do something big to host. You have to like throw this huge elaborate party. And then we just do nothing. This is the nuance we're talking about, is like, go hang out at your friend's house. If you're not going to go hang out there, invite them to your house. I love the idea of people like going grocery shopping together, or going to the gym together, or doing something, going for a walk. Like, there are things that you can do that don't involve this elaborateness. And don't let social media trick you into thinking that that is the only way to spend time with people. Because I see it often that then people are just like, well, I can't afford to leave my house. I can't afford to do this. I can't afford to have friends. And the nihilism is just unhelpful. To tie it back to what you were saying about Ashley Tisdale and the mom group, and it's like, when I think of a toxic mom group, I think of like extreme fighting.
Yes.
tons of people talking about other people behind their back.
Yes.
Being two-faced.
Clicks.
But some people are going to naturally be.
Yeah.
What is a click?
Here's how I would define a click. And I could be wrong. But I'm bold in my opinions.
All right, go for it. And then I will fact check you.
A click is when there are a group of people who purposely go out of their way to prevent other people from joining their group, or have selective, very specific qualifications for who gets to be in the group. And it's also very easy to be dismissed from the group when you no longer fit their imagined rules and social mm-hmm. expectations. And often within the clique, the social expectations and rules are changing and there's double standards and they are very exclusionary. That's yep. how I would define it.
That is correct. The clear definition of it is like exclusivity. Mm. If you look at the difference between a regular friend group and a clique is closed, tightly knit, and they intentionally restrict membership, limiting members' exposure to other social circles. Mm. Regular friend groups are more open, fluid, and less defined by exclusion. So there you go.
Fair. Yeah.
You're in or out.
Yeah, you're
so yeah, I mean, obviously we don't know, but it seems like if there were any events where everyone was going, it wasn't a click. And it's just wild to have this conversation, because if I were listening to this conversation 11, 12 years ago, I would have been so mad. So
from even just like a professional perspective, reading through that, let alone personal, there are so many holes. There are so many holes where I have a hard time just like broad stroking this and being like, toxic group, victim left, victim all good, group all bad. I am not seeing anything in that even if a client brought it to me, my first instinct would be like, girl, you escaped such a scary, dark situation. I would be like, tell me more about that. Like, tell me about that situation. Like, what was the conversation? What were you hearing? Because, and I will tell my clients this too. My job, in the back of my mind, when I am hearing a story, is to think, what could somebody else's perspective, understanding, and intention be?
And that doesn't mean they're wrong and someone else is right. It's just that, yeah, all of us benefit from zooming
perspective.
Out and looking at things from other people's shoes and looking at things from a bird's eye view.
With all this said, I find there's no easy road for conflict resolution. And I think friendship is hard because friendship is such a key critical infrastructure to our life. And I think there is so much socialization around friendship and what it means to be a friend and what it means to have friends. And it is effort and time and consistency to build and maintain friendships and build and maintain strong friendships. And some of them will not go the distance, and that's okay. And every single person on earth is going to have some type of a friendship breakup or demise at some point. There's no avoiding it. And I think if friendship is something that has been weighing on your mind through all of this conversation around, even for this year, how many people are like, I'm going analog. I want to do more in person. I want to like focus on building my own third spaces and community and knowing my neighbors and all of this, right? There will be moments that will feel uncomfortable. There will be moments where you might have to express yourself in a way that feels really new and really clunky, and you'll have to hang in there. And also someone might express that to you, and you will have to figure out how to sit in that discomfort of knowing you maybe hurt somebody's feelings or you did something wrong, and you're going to have to take ownership of that. Mm-hmm. And that is the only way that you can build sustainable friendship. Because that is how people trust you. That is how people learn to trust that you are someone who is reliable, dependable, that you will take accountability. And if you're walking around telling everybody how important it is that you're authentic and that you're an authentic person and that you want people who are authentic around you, guess what that means? Authenticity is not clean. Mm-hmm. Authenticity is really messy, and it is an ever-evolving – it's a commitment to being like an evolving person, mm-hmm. right? And recognizing the strengths and the weaknesses that are inherent in everybody. And so for you to embrace that mm-hmm. and decide what does friendship mean to me? What do I want friendship to bring to my life? What do I want to bring as a friend?
Yep.
And you live your life authentically in that way. And accept that simply because discomfort comes, that doesn't necessarily mean something is toxic. Just because you have to advocate for yourself and advocate for what you're feeling or what you're thinking, that doesn't mean that the dynamic is toxic. It's okay to ask open-ended questions of people. It's okay to check in without centering yourself.
And I come back to too, like, she was, you know, a lot of this, it sounds like, was inspired by what she would tell her daughter. And what I would tell my daughter is, like, it's important to hear other people's perspectives and to listen to other people and give people the benefit of the doubt. Like, this is how we teach kids how to think critically, I think. Well, we rest our case. If you want to hear Sam and I talk 40 more minutes.
40 more minutes.
About this and get into some of the more nitty gritty. We look at some of the comments people wrote. We talk about the world being terrible and nihilism.
As per usual, anything that you can do to get the word out about the pod, if you can rate, review, share, subscribe, that would be lovely. We see your comments. If you have any ideas for episodes or things you want us to chat about, let us know.
What were the ones we had shouted out today? Do you guys want us
hobbies?
To do? Well, we're going to definitely do hobbies, but let us know if you have questions.
Yeah. And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.